zijn Ingrid en Gara, founders of NoCo.
This is a series of podcasts, Business of Collaboration, a conversation with a professor and a business executive.
Once per month, we interview a professor and a business on how to work together to find a common understanding and inspiration.
So subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and on our website noco.net. Join us in our journey. Welcome in this special edition of our Business of Collaboration podcast. During three podcasts, we interview the keynote speakers and delegates of the ISPIM conference in Fukuoka, Japan. ISPIM is the International Society for Professional Innovation Management. Its members represent many sectors, including the research, industrial, consulting, and public sectors. The conference in Fukuoka addresses three critical challenges that are also of global importance, such as how can we deal with aging populations? How should we transition our production and use of energy? And how do we build successful startup ecosystems?
We interview Patrick Bonnet, Professor of Practice at University of Newcastle, Advisor to UK Government on the Aging Grand Challenge, and Development Director of the National Innovation Centre for Aging in Newcastle, in UK. He established this centre, which is the first one in Europe to take care of the aging population for an innovation angle. We will talk about the challenges to innovate for the aging population, how to innovate for the design mindset, and how to create new products with the user in the center. In his spare time, Patrick is enjoying outdoor sports, for instance, cross-country running. So, welcome, Patrick. Thank you for being here in our Business of Collaboration podcast. It's really an honor to have you here talking about innovation, how you manage the Innovation Center, and how you are working in the specific topic of aging population. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, and of course, we have a couple of questions prepared for you, Patrick. Some more business-like questions and some more personal questions. We leave them for the end. And an opening question to really get to know you also for our audience is we know you are expert in the aging population matter, of course, but how and why did you start working on this topic from the innovation perspective? What's the story behind it? Can you share that with us?
Yes, I'm... My background is innovation, so it's I am also a professor of practice at Newcastle University in innovation environments, and I've always, over the last 30 years or so, I've worked in innovation systems. So that's both corporate research labs, that's government sector research establishments, and I've always been very interested in how innovation works on the ground, how you can translate ideas into products and services. So from that, I became involved in managing science parks, innovation centres. So my expertise is very much around how you build physical, virtual innovation environments. And then my particular role at the moment is how you apply that to the ageing sector, to the ageing market, to the ageing grand challenge.
Yeah. And because, you know, you picked this topic obviously for a very good reason. can you share us what are the key challenges you saw when you started with this topic, aging population?
Well, I think there are a number of challenges. I think we can all relate as individuals, as human beings, to what aging means to us on a personal level. You know, we all have relatives who are aging, we all have loved ones who are aging, we all have friends who age. I think the challenge is how you translate what is a challenge into an opportunity. So quite often it's framed as a challenge. Actually, it's an enormous global opportunity, and how you involve the consumer, the older citizen, in co-designing that innovative solution. So how do you get to a situation where businesses, innovation practitioners develop goods and services which delight, which are aspirational rather than sometimes what some people call sort of beige and boring products, which stigmatize an older population. So I think that challenge of language, of marketing, and in involvement of the consumer, the customer, the individuals who are aging themselves is the key challenge.
And of course, with your background in innovation, you can actually combine those two, right? Innovation, how to innovate within the aging population, and the type of services to create there.
Absolutely. And it's both that co-creation of products, but also the creation of the processes by which you actually engage with older citizens, so we can ensure that they have a voice in that process of co-creation as well.
Okay, so you really involve them, because it is, do I look at it correctly if I say it's a collaboration between new research, for instance, from universities, companies who are looking to actually grow a new market or an existing market like the aging population, and then involving the elderly as well within the process of actually inventing, or do they come later in the process?
No, you're absolutely right. It involves applied researchers, and that's both from the university sector, but also from the research and technology organisations. Yeah. So not just the university sector, but corporate labs, privatised research laboratories, but also ensuring that the voice of older citizens is at the heart of that. And one of the activities which we operate is a panel, essentially, of 10,000 older people who we operate through a process called VOICE. And VOICE stands for Valuing Our Intellectual Capital and Experience. And that uses individuals who essentially, they're older, but they're research active citizens. So they bring to any issue, to any problem, both their experiences of what it is to grow old and what they require through that process, but also their professional expertise. So for example, in the building of our new innovation centre, 100,000 square foot of new space, a £50 million new building, we're very keen that building is age inclusive and is as age friendly as possible. So for the panel that we've used to inform that's been drawn from retired architects, retired building engineers, retired surveyors, and that type of process can be applied across a whole range of products and services. And that's exciting, it's challenging, and it's innovative in itself.
So depending on the topic, really, the 10,000 people, the elderly, they all have different skills, of course, and different expertise. So depending on the topic, you can actually ask a subset of those people to help you, to give you input, insights, and be creative within a certain innovation or within a certain topic, like building the new area you have.
Absolutely, yes. And they, it's something which, just because you retire, doesn't mean to say that your brain becomes inactive. So it's hugely stimulating and satisfying for older citizens as well to be able to contribute to those development of goods and services. And that's the VOICE network is something which we're now expanding globally. So we'll have VOICE chapters in a number of countries across the globe.
Wow, interesting. That's really good. Yeah, a lot of elderly people I see that around me are staying in their current work, and they just like to contribute to society. So
it's not about
quitting when you're 60, but just living on and keep on contributing and enjoying it.
Indeed, yes.
So Patrick, you're going to the ISPIM conference in Fukuoka, Japan in early December. Can you tell us a bit more about your role during the conference there?
I can, yes. I'm delighted that I'll be moderating the conference challenge discussion on how can we deal with an aging population. So we have a number of invited speakers and a number of discussion panelists, and I'm sure it'll be a very lively conversation, bringing the expertise of speakers and panelists from across the world to focus down on what the challenges and what the opportunities are as we age.
Exactly. And do you, because obviously you're focusing, or do you focus on a certain region now, or you're already focusing European or global within this certain topic of aging population?
No, we were established by the UK government for two reasons. One mm-hmm. was because aging is a societal challenge in the United Kingdom. Our population is aging at yeah. speed. But it was also recognised that it was both a global challenge and a global opportunity. So we're working with partners yeah. in America, in Australia and Singapore. Many of the challenges that the UK faces and many of the opportunities that the UK faces are exactly the same in a number of nation states across the world.
Okay, yeah, that was I was wondering about when you said you're leading a conference there, because you know, it must be the same all over the world, but there, do you also see changes, for instance, in the challenges of aging population?
Or? I think many of the headline challenges are very similar. So
yeah,
it was interesting last week. I just did an internet search of some of the recent reports which have been published on aging demographics. And you know, many of the issues are the same in Australia, in New Zealand. There's a recent report published in Canada. In the USA, 265,000 people turn 65 every month.
Wow.
So there are similarities, but obviously there are also subtle differences, both in the cultural norms in terms of any solutions, but also in perhaps the nature of some of the most pressing challenges which different nation states face. So for some that might be elderly health care, social care. For others it might be what are the implications of an aging population for transport systems or for the future of housing and public spaces. So there are some similarities, but perhaps the emphasis that different countries would have might vary.
Yeah, I can imagine, because some countries have a very good health system, others don't. So they will have a bigger challenge adjusting their health system, of course. And that's the same for the public transportation and for the way houses are being built. That's I can imagine that. That will be an interesting discussion you will be leading in Fukuoka then. Hopefully there will be some of the differences given during that session as well.
Absolutely, and it's a really interesting topic for Japan as well, because obviously the population there is aging yeah. at a significant rate. I mean, there yeah. are some districts in Japan in which a third of the population are already over 65. Wow. So for Japan itself, it's a really significant but also a very exciting challenge and an opportunity.
And why exciting?
Exciting, because I think there's the opportunity to do things differently. There's the opportunity to, if we can help citizens to age well for longer, mm-hmm. Sometimes the fact that our life expectancy is increasing can be viewed yeah. in quite a pessimistic way, but it's something that we should celebrate. You know, the fact that life expectancy is increasing by 12 minutes an hour or five hours every day, our life expectancy increases.
Okay,
it's
wow.
wonderful.
We're gaining as we go.
Yeah, but the challenge is to make sure that those are years full of life,
yeah,
rather than just a life of years. And I think that's the really exciting opportunity, to make sure that yes, we have more in terms of years, but they're good years as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's to grow old healthy and enjoy as yeah. much as you can. That's true. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I was looking at your role as a development director, if I'm right, and mm-hmm. a prior deputy director at the National Innovation Center for Aging. And this center, this is inside the Newcastle University, right? Or is the new center outside? Because you were talking about the new center you just built.
Yeah, it's a brand new building. It's being built in Newcastle, but it's part of an urban innovation park, which is off the university campus, right in the centre of the city of Newcastle upon Tyne. And it's a national centre, so we're jointly funded by UK government, and jointly funded by Newcastle University. And my role as development director is, I guess, twofold. It's to ensure that the building is built in a way which is inclusive and delivers that collaborative open innovation space and environment that encourages businesses, applied researchers, members of the public to come together to work on the co-design of products and services. My other role is I act as an advisor to the UK government on the Ageing Grant Challenge, and that relates to how does the UK government, which has identified the ageing society as one of the four priority areas within its industrial strategy, how does UK government then translate that into tangible, visible and meaningful activities on the ground which benefit UK society and the UK economy?
That's an important topic as well. That's, and looking at that, because you have the UK government at one hand, you're helping them to actually to help them with the population, the aging population. Of course, they need to work, I presume they need to work with private institutions, with companies. How are you helping them collaborate together? Or is it, you know, normal for them to collaborate? Do they need any help, or is there a challenge in that?
No, not really. We do, we work with a number of UK businesses and indeed international businesses, both small and medium-sized enterprises through to large multinational, internationally recognised names operating in a range of sectors. So all those organisations have identified that this is a growing global market and a growing global opportunity. So there's not really any difficulty finding the businesses to work with. So we work with them to help them develop an age-relevant strategy for the development of their products and services. We work with them on what innovation means for an aging population. We work with them in terms of marketing and messaging and how you interact with those consumers. So it's certainly it's an emerging market, but it's a market which a number of businesses across the globe now recognize as really very significant in terms of their future corporate strategies.
Okay, and do you normally, because are those companies coming to you or to the government with their ideas, or is the government, because they gain new insights where you help them, where you help the government gain those insights, going towards the companies to ask for advice? How does the collaboration start? From what, which direction?
It's a bit of both, but at the moment it's mainly businesses approaching us. I mean, we talk to businesses. We're quite active. Newcastle University has a range of existing relationships with businesses, but equally there's a whole number of other organisations which essentially have come to us because we're unique in Europe. There's nothing else like the National Innovation Centre for Ageing in Europe. So that expertise is now quite widely known, and it's recognised as sort of the go-to place to come to for those insights and that support.
Yeah, exactly, and that makes it, of course, special. So you when they come to you, you translate the new insights they will bring into projects you can jointly do within the Innovation Centre. Do I see that correctly?
Yes, and then we were also very keen on engaging with the public. So once those products and services are being developed, how are they tested? How does that feedback work? Mm-hmm. And what is the research, you know, the rigorous research which underpins that product development as well? So all of those things come together to support the development of goods and services.
Do you have to reach out to other universities or to other experts outside the Innovation Centre to now and then bring in research?
Absolutely. So whilst we are based in Newcastle, we are a national innovation centre for ageing. So our role is also to act as a the front door, essentially, to the expertise which the UK's universities might hold, the research and technologies organisations, the applied research providers might provide in the UK, but also recognising that there's specific expertise and globally significant expertise throughout the world. So our role is to support those activities, to facilitate the conversations, to signpost to organisations to where they can provide, where they can source support, and to enable those conversations to be had. So we're based in Newcastle, but we are a national centre. We're global by design and collaborative by instinct is our motto.
So that's a huge task you have within the Innovation Centre there. So can you give us 3 points you would like to mention about how to successfully manage, like you do, the Innovation Centre with the dedicated to this ageing population?
I think the key areas I've mentioned some of them already is to ensure that the solutions which are being designed and developed have the individual, the customer, the older citizen, whatever you want to call it, at the heart of the solution. So, you know, it's this thing about demand pull rather than supply push. The solutions which have been co-designed and co-developed, I think that's key. I think the role of design is also key. We shouldn't lose sight of the fact that the vast majority of the disposable income, certainly in Europe, is held by the over 50s, the over 55s. So this is a group of individuals who are fitter, healthier, wealthier than they've ever been. And yet quite often the complaint they will have is actually no one designs for them. A lot of what is designed for them as solutions are... quite institutionalized. They're not things which you would aspire to buy, which delight you. So I think that role of design and developing beautiful products is really important. And I think the other point is just the language. If you ask any individual what old is, old will always be 15 years older than they are themselves. So no one regards themselves as old. So as soon as you develop products and services and you market them as being for older people, you've done yourself no favours, because you're trying to sell to a market segment which no one recognises themselves as being in. So
no, it's non-existing, because everybody says that's 15 years from now for me.
that's not for me. And you know, it's very difficult to define what old is. Your biological age does not necessarily equate to your chronological age. So you can be young and healthy at 80, or you can begin to display some of the characteristics, the biological characteristics of aging at 43, 44, 45. So how the language which is used, the design of the products, and ensuring that you actually ensure that the people who need them and want them are at the heart of that co-design process, I think are the three key areas.
That's why the voice you mentioned at the beginning of our talk is so important, of course, because that really gives you insight whether or not it will fit a certain population of people or not.
No one wants that to happen. No one wants a product to go through a development cycle to hit the market and then find that there's no demand for it.
And what if you could name 3 examples that came out of the Innovation Centre for the Ageing Population, 3 innovative products or services, which one would you like to share with us?
This is difficult, because a number of the projects we're working on are commercially sensitive, as I'm sure you'll appreciate. So they're under non-disclosure agreements. But one which I think is very interesting is public benching, public seats. So it doesn't sound very interesting, doesn't sound very high tech. But we worked with a group within Voice who said, well, actually, for us, getting out of our houses, getting into public realm space in cities is really important. It helps us to socialize, it helps us to exercise, but actually the benches, the seating which is provided in the city centers isn't what we need. It isn't fit for purpose. It's either designed to discourage rough sleepers, sort of homeless people, or it's designed as a security feature to prevent sort of cars being driven into shops or the wider population, or it's designed by designers and who never actually had to sit on it.
So then really not designed to sit.
If you go out of any city station in any urban area in Europe and look at the benches, they're rubbish. They're absolutely rubbish.
Yes, they are. I agree.
So we worked with a voice workshop, and we co-designed what we call the Vitality Bench. So it's not simply a bench for older people. It's just a bench which works for everyone. So there are 14 different innovations in that, which range from the height of the bench, so you don't need to lower yourself in and out a great distance, which if you are becoming physically infirm can be difficult. The colours of the materials, so if you have visual impairment, that can be a challenge. The nature of the material itself, so it's a warm material. Even small solutions such as on the armrests, almost a bit like a cup holder, but that cup holder is designed to hold a walking stick. So if you sit down, the last thing you want is for your walking stick then to fall on the floor, because by its very nature, you may find it difficult to actually bend over and pick that up. And that's been great. That product is really exciting. And I think for innovation, sometimes we can get a little too excited and focused on some of the more cutting edge science, for want of a better word. But for a product which is visible and meaningful for members of the population, being able to see a bench in a city centre near a bus stop, which has been designed so that everyone can use it and it works for everyone, that's a really powerful and tangible example of how innovation can help every member of society. Yeah. And that's great.
That's very well said. Because basically it's useful for all ages actually. And it makes absolute sense, and the devil is in the detail, like you say. That's a good example, actually. I'm through my basic questions regarding aging population, but we are curious, of course, about some personal things of you. So I have only three questions for you, if you allow me. The first one is, we were curious what your favorite place for holidays is.
We have two daughters, and both of those are in their 20s. They're absolutely delightful, and they still insist on coming on holiday with us. And the place which we enjoy going to is the very far northwest of Scotland. It's very remote. There's no one there. We like the hills. We like very windswept, occasionally warm beaches. So the far northwest of Scotland is where we would go.
Well, that's a beautiful place. Yeah. And it's a really rough, rough area of Scotland with the sea line, of course, as well there.
Yeah, and it's great. You either put more clothes on or you take more clothes off, depending on what the weather's like.
Yeah.
You just come prepared for everything.
Yeah, but I guess you always have to take a lot of clothes with you, just to be sure. Okay, well, that's a nice place. And did you go there this time?
We did, yes. We were there in August.
And how do your mornings look like? Because I think you're a very busy man. But I hope you still have plenty of time to have breakfast, maybe even with the family.
Yeah, mornings are fairly hectic. Both our daughters, one is still at university, the other has a job down in the south of the country. So it's just myself and my wife. And we don't say a lot over breakfast. I think we're both still vaguely sleepy. But mornings tend to be pretty varied. So I spend a lot of time out of the office. So I spend a good deal of time down in London in Whitehall with government departments. Next week I'm in San Francisco. So as long as it's varied, it's good. As long as the mornings are varied, I'm happy.
Yeah, exactly. And you do have breakfast then, of course. So and in your spare time, when you do have some, hopefully, what do you do during the weekends, for instance, or during the evenings when you have some spare time?
I've always been very keen on mountains, and I am a very keen in the UK. In England, it's called fell running. In Scotland, it would be called hill running. For the past 28, 30 years, I've been an active competitor in things called mountain marathons. So those are sort of 2-day hill running events. So you're self-contained. You carry a tent, your food, spare clothing, sleeping bag, and you compete in teams of two, and you navigate. So it's hill running and orienteering. Mm-hmm. So you'll navigate across the country. And I used to, I used to do those with my wife for a number of years until she decided that actually she preferred horse riding and ditched me.
You had to find a new runner.
So I do those, and I'm also I'm quite keen on. I think in Europe it's probably called ultra running. So long distance sort of off road running. So there's a thing called the Bob Graham Round in the United Kingdom, which is sort of regarded as sort of the blue ribboned challenge to undertake, and I've done that. And that involves 66 miles and 27,000 feet of climb in 24 hours across the mountains of Lake District, which I did, which I found great fun. So keeping fit.
Wow, that's a lot of energy. I'm very much impressed.
I think we should live what we preach, and if we know that you stay young by exercise, then I'd like to think I practice what I preach.
That's perfect.
Exactly. Yeah, totally agree. Thank you very much. I am as well hyper impressed about your marathon capabilities. So keep going, Patrick, because I think it's keeping you very healthy and young with your body and mind. So thank you very much for this podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Patrick. It's been my pleasure interviewing you, and look really forward to hearing more from you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. As usual, you can find a sum up of this podcast with pictures and interviews at noco.net. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our account is noco platform. See you next month.